This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama and then our feature, Justice and Peace. We shall close with the sports roundup. I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. The Holy See Press Office issued an update on Tuesday morning regarding the state of health of Pope Francis. According to that update, the Holy Father spent a peaceful Monday night at Gemelli Catholic Hospital in Rome, where he was admitted on Friday 14th this month, and on Tuesday he continued with therapy. The brief statement follows one on Monday evening, which said the Pope's health had slightly improved, but he was still in a critical condition. Meanwhile, hundreds of Catholics gathered on Monday evening in St. Peter's Square here in the Vatican for the first schedule of evening prayer services for the recovery of the Pope. The prayer service was led by the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolini. The second prayer service was scheduled for Tuesday at 20 hours GMT in the same St. Peter's Square and is expected to be led by Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagli, the pro-prefect of the Dicastery for Evangelization. The Holy See released on Tuesday Pope Francis's message for this year's Lenten season. The message has the title, "Let Us Journey Together in Hope." In the message, the Pope invites the faithful to journey together in hope and to take the opportunity of the Lenten season and actively embark on the path of spiritual renewal without fear or reluctance to move out of their comfort zones. This year's Lenten season begins on March 5th with the smearing of the ashes. The Vatican Secretary for Relations with States and International Organizations, Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher, has called upon rich countries and organizations to cancel the debts of poor countries. He made the call on Tuesday at the United Nations Palace in Geneva during a high-level meeting organized by the Permanent Observer Mission of the Holy See and the United Nations Trade and Development Organization. He said 3.3 billion people, almost half of the world's population, live in countries that spend more on debt repayment than on health or education. These countries, he went on, are struggling to pay their debts. Quoting Pope Francis's recent appeal to cancel or substantially reduce debt during this Jubilee year, Archbishop Gallagher reminded the creditors that the cancellation of debts for those who cannot pay is a moral imperative and a matter of justice. As you heard on this program, the missionaries of Africa who are serving in the Central Africa province, which is made up of Rwanda, Burundi, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, are scheduled to conclude their two-week workshop on the protection of minors on Wednesday, February 26th. The workshop opened on 15th this month in the Burundian capital, Bujumbura. Father Stanley Lubunga is the Superior General of the Missionaries of Africa. He told Vatican Radio that the protection of minors is one of the congregation's priorities.
We have to prepare and conscientize our confreres who are in the missions. As Missionaries of Africa, we take seriously the invitation of the Pope to look into this issue. And as everyone knows, this is something that has tainted the credibility of ministers. So this is our concern, that there is integrity among pastors, among ministers, and that children can grow up safely and never lose confidence in the church, which has played and continues to play an important role in the education of children. If they are not safe enough, then we are not rendering any good services to the church.
Father Stanley Lubunga, the Superior General of the Missionaries of Africa. You can hear more from him in a moment in our feature, Justice and Peace. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The United Nations Development Programme, UNDP, warned on Tuesday that the debt crisis facing the world's poorest economies is reaching new highs and debt servicing is eating up a growing share of revenues at the expense of spending on development. A new multilateral debt relief deal that includes all creditors warrants serious attention, United Nations Development Programme said in a policy report, which was published as the G20 finance ministers and central bank governors kicked off their meeting in South Africa. Egypt says it rejects proposals to displace the Palestinian people so that there is no liquidation of the Palestinian cause. The Egyptian presidency said in a statement on Tuesday that the rejection of the proposal will also help to avoid threatening the national security of countries in the region. United States President Donald Trump has angered the Arab world with a plan to permanently displace the population of more than 2 million Palestinians from Gaza, assert United States control over the territory and turn it into an international beach resort. Egypt, who on March 4th host an Emergence Arab League summit set to focus on Arab efforts to counter Trump's plan and calls for Egypt and Jordan to resettle displaced Palestinians from Gaza. Both countries reject the proposal, citing national security concerns. A new testing of a cheap and deadly drug that has triggered a national emergency in Sierra Leone reveals it is composed of synthetic opioids and cannabinoids imported from abroad, according to a report published on Tuesday. Sierra Leone's President Julius Maada Bio declared a national emergency on substance abuse last April, following calls for a crackdown on the drug known as Kush, which is also used in at least 5 other West African countries. But the lack of information about the chemicals in Kush and their origins had complicated efforts to combat it, according to the report by the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime and Glingdale, the Netherlands Institute of International Relations. The drug has long been widely rumored to contain everything from rat poison to acetone and human bones and to be made full in Sierra Leone. Instead, the tests requested by the Sierra Leone government revealed some samples containing synthetic opioids known as nitazenes, which are up to 25 times more potent than fentanyl. Rapid-acting opioid drugs that alleviate pain without causing loss of consciousness. Exposure to fentanyl may be fatal. Some 7,000 people have died since January in fighting in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. This is according to the Prime Minister of the DRC in her report on Monday to a high-level meeting of the Human Rights Council in Geneva. About 3,000 deaths were reported in Goma, with combatants and civilians among the dead, Judith Suminwa said, adding that another 450,000 plus people were left without shelter after 90 displacement camps were destroyed. Since January, the Rwanda-backed M23 rebel group has captured swathes of eastern Congo, including the cities of Goma and Bukavu, and vulnerable mineral deposits. The latest fighting and M23's advance are part of a major escalation in eastern Congo of a conflict over power, identity and resources dating back to the Rwandan genocide in the 1990s. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now, our feature, Justice and Peace. The Missionaries of Africa, commonly known as the White Fathers, are marking this year the 200th anniversary of the birth of their founder, Cardinal Charles Lavigerie. A French national, Cardinal Lavigerie was born on 31st October 1825 in Bayonne in southwestern France. He was ordained a priest for the Diocese of Paris in 1849 and nominated Bishop of the Diocese of Nancy in 1863. In 1867, he was transferred to the Archdiocese of Algiers in present Algeria in North Africa and elevated to the status of Archbishop. In 1868, he founded a missionary congregation for males known as the White Fathers, but today known as the Society of the Missionaries of Africa. And in 1869, he founded the Missionary Sisters of Our Lady of Africa to evangelize the African continent. In 1882, Pope Leo XIII named him Cardinal. Cardinal Lavigerie died in Algiers on 26th November 1892 at the age of 67 years when he was still serving as Archbishop of Algiers. Last Saturday, February 23rd, we had the privilege of hosting Father Stanley Lubunga, the Superior General of the Missionaries of Africa, who explained how they are celebrating the 200th or bicentenary anniversary of the birth of Cardinal Lavigerie.
The 200th birthday itself will be in October this year, but we started in October last year so that we can celebrate a whole year with our founder. We have taken a commitment to know him better. We have a group of historians that have been working on that to prepare texts and events in the life of our founder. Many things that we ignored. So we are taking every day a piece of literature that he had written to reflect on that, to pray on that. There will be retreats and recollections organized following much of what he has left as heritage. But the most important thing for us is like we are going back to the source to get to know this man in himself. So we are centered on the man, Lavigerie himself.
Cardinal Lavigerie is known for his anti-slavery campaign. Unfortunately, today the African continent is experiencing new forms of slavery, prostitution, human trafficking, and others. Now, how do you engage in the fight against modern forms of slavery in your evangelization today?
The anti-slavery campaign that our founder carried has always been an event that has marked our way of thinking as missionaries, our commitment to justice and peace, aware that we cannot preach the word of God to people who are suffering all sorts of slavery. In 2013, in a special way, we had commemorated the 125th year or anniversary of the campaign that our cardinal carried in the year 1888. That was a moment to ask ourselves, how does he inspire us? I think it was at that moment, even if we have always been aware, but at that moment, we told ourselves, actually, there are a lot of practices that leave the African in slavery. So since 2013, we took those choices, and our confreres, like the sisters, are networking with organizations like Talita Kum. Quite a number of our confreres have followed formation that is offered by Talita Kum in Rome, and they have started little sections of Talita Kum in the different countries where we are present. They accompany people who are enslaved by others, and also we are more aware of the necessity to commit ourselves to the service of migrants in North Africa and other countries where people are trying to leave the African continent. And then they are vulnerable, and then they can be subject to all sorts of exploitation. We have also a group of confreres who have specialized in international relations and who work in instances where political decisions are made that can influence the continent. So people who are there to say, look, once you decide on these principles, these are the consequences on the continent in Africa. It is a way of still fighting for Africa that unfortunately is still a victim in many, many ways from different stakeholders who are interested in the resources in Africa. Even that is a kind of injustice, which is not very, very different from slavery.
Your founder, Cardinal Lavigeri, is less known than some of the members of the congregation that he founded. Yet his contribution to the evangelization of the African continent is enormous.
Yes.
For example, in Uganda, where I come from, Father Simeon Rudel, Brother Delma Samans, Livinyak, I think. Livinyak or Livinyak?
Livinyak.
Livinyak. I think that was the first bishop of that area. Yeah. They are very much known. If we went and asked the faithful, who is Cardinal Lavigeri, they will say, what are you talking about? Who is that one? But if you say, who is Mapera, they will give you a litany of who Mapera is, what Mapera did, why Mapera is important in Uganda, why we need so many Maperas, and so on and so forth. Cardinal Lavigeri is known very, very little and only in intellectual circles. Now, does your society have any plans to make Cardinal Lavigeri more known to the continent he loved so much?
He is known a bit more in North Africa because he was Archbishop of Algiers. Then he stayed many years in Tunisia, and he is very well known in North Africa. If you go to North Africa, they know him. Even among our brothers and sisters, Muslims, it's amazing that there are some townships that have taken even his name. He had not gone to sub-Saharan Africa. He was not a missionary of Africa himself. He just founded us. But there is something interesting that is happening now. When you go to Kenya, in some parts of Uganda, you go to Zambia, Democratic Republic of Congo, we have what are called the Lavigeri groups. In honor of his memory, we have also taken the opportunity of the bicentenary to launch what we have called the Lavigeri family. And this brings together the missionaries of Africa, the missionary sisters of Our Lady of Africa, and all the congregations and religious congregations that were founded by our own confreres and by the sisters, because we believe we all share in the spirit of our founder. They know who our founder is, and we want to belong to this same family, which we will call the Lavigeri family. So it is a moment for the different congregations, but also for those who have benefited from the work of the missionaries of Africa to know, if I may say, their grandfather.
Sure.
This is a project that we are working on. Pope Francis has invited a lot the religious families to share the charism with the lay people also. Many of our friends, many people like you are talking of yourself who have known the missionaries of Africa, they are linked to this great man for the African continent. We are diffusing his literature even among the lay people, and we hope that Africa will honor one day its predecessors in the faith, and he will surely be remembered in line with the Maperas and all the others who have been elsewhere on the continent.
Sure. No, that is very interesting, and I'm very glad that we have called him our grandfather.
Yes.
Because
Uganda wouldn't have had Mapera without Cardinal Ravigiri.
Yeah.
Zambia, where you come from, would not have had the faith as it is now without Cardinal Ravigiri.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. So we are looking forward.
The literature that he was sharing with Livinyak, for instance, this is interesting. Uganda, now they have a museum, the Livinyak Museum. There you read how he was following the missions, what was happening on the spot there. I think this will be very interesting even for the Ugandan people to see how from far he was actually following the development of the faith in Uganda.
Sure. Now, Pope Francis has called us to be pilgrims of hope in the ongoing Jubilee. How does your society respond to this call, especially in areas of war and conflict? For example, EU confreres work in the Sahel region. They are also found in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
We are working in parishes often where the people are. So we are living with the people, and we share in this confusion and disturbances that they go through, and we want to remain with them as much as we can. You've mentioned what is happening in Eastern Congo. We have confreres in Goma, as we have confreres in Bukavu. These confreres have been at the service of the people since many years. In times like this, our confreres in Goma stayed on the spot. Those in Bukavu, they stayed on the spot. And they have been welcoming people who were finding refuge in our parishes and in the schools that we have there. This is very symbolic. In times of difficult like that, people go to the church because they believe that they
are safe.
They are safe, yeah. And this is what has been happening. Our people are there, and once they welcome them there, they try to do what they can to offer them a cup of porridge with the little that we can find from people who are helping. We want to be there as signs of hope. We hope with them that this will come to an end.
Father Stanley Lubunga, the Superior General of the Missionaries of Africa. And that was Justice and Peace for this week.
This is a sports roundup, and welcome to the program. My name is Kenyatta Godfrey Kampamba. The Athletics Integrity Unit has slapped Kenyan marathoner Karen Cheptoek with a 2-year ban after testing positive for a banned substance. The agency has reviewed the fact that the 31-year-old tested positive for methylprednisolone in the aftermath of her second place finish at the Taipei Marathon in December last year. On 27th January last year, Cheptoek had clocked 2 hours, 32 minutes and 53 seconds to finish second in the Taipei Marathon in what was her third podium finish of the year. She had also claimed second at the KGL Millennium Marathon in Accra in September, as well as at the Jakarta International Marathon in June. The 31-year-old boasts several titles to her name. Following her ban, Athletics Integrity Unit have disqualified Cheptoek's results on and since December 15th, including prize money, appearance, titles, and any awards. Another Kenyan marathon runner, Brimin Kipkorir, has been provisionally suspended after he tested positive for prohibited substances, the Athletics Integrity Unit said on Monday. Kipkorir won the Sydney Marathon in 2024 in a course record time of 2 hours, 6 minutes and 18 seconds, and the Frankfurt Marathon in 2022 and 2023. Meantime, Ethiopia's Yomif Kejelka will target another record-breaking performance at the 10-kilometer Faxak Castellon, a World Athletics Labour Road race on Sunday. The 27-year-old may have lost his world indoor mile record last Saturday, but he's still the world half marathon record holder thanks to his stunning 57 minutes and 30 seconds run in Valencia last October. Soon after that race, he turned his attention to taking down the world 10-kilometer record of 26 minutes and 24 seconds in Castellon. Burundi's Castellón-based Rodriguez Quisera will be the pacemaker, and he has been tasked with reaching the halfway point in 13 minutes and 12 seconds. Kajioka isn't the only athlete in the field capable of finishing inside 27 minutes. Kenya's world cross-country bronze medalist and 2021 world under 25,000-meter champion Benson Kiplagat has a personal best of 12 minutes and 58.78 seconds for 5,000 meters and 26 minutes, 55.09 seconds for 10,000 meters. He will be joined by fellow Kenyans Daniel Kinyanju, who ran 27 minutes and 6 seconds for 10 kilometers last month in Valencia, and Brian Kibor, a 27 minutes and 31 seconds performer. Other athletes to watch are Ethiopian teenagers Yismael Dilu and Kuma Jirma. South Sudan, the world's youngest nation, will soon be making their second appearance in the qualifiers of the Total Energies Confederation of African Football Women's Africa Women's Cup of Nations. Since their attempt for the 2024 finals, South Sudan played its first match of the qualifiers against Algeria at the Juba National Stadium. Despite the historic significance of this match, the South Sudanese side suffered a 5-0 defeat against a much more experienced Algerian side. South Sudan has made significant strides in women's football in recent years. And on that note, we come to the end of today's edition of our Sports Roundup. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature Health and Healing and our segment on the Jubilee Year 2025. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.